This is the Daily Dispatch podcast with your business correspondent, Ted Keenan.
Good morning, podcast listeners. Joining us today via telephone are two of South Africa's top energy activists.
Good day, everyone. My name is Ulrich Steenkamp. I am a campaigner at EarthLife Africa Johannesburg. I form part of the anti-nuclear team. Yes, and I am also one of the conveners of the Climate Justice Action Group, which is an advocacy group against climate and social injustices in the different communities that EarthLife Africa is working on.
Yesterday, Daily Dispatch discovered that Shell is doing a massive exploration for oil and gas off the Transkei coast. They're going to have a ship patrolling up and down and basically doing air pumps into the ocean. Is this something that concerns the environmental bodies?
Yes, it does concern the different environmental bodies as a whole, because for the most part, when they're doing their prospecting, their majority of the stuff does not have any proper licensing or any environmental impact assessments that are being done. And the seismic surveys that they do is very disruptive to marine life, especially your marine mammals such as your whales and your dolphins. And the seismic surveys that they do is actually quite deafening. So it will lead to lots of disruptions within the blue economy as well as with tourism and stuff, because we might have lots of whale beachings and then fish migrating and stuff. So it will be impacting our ocean life, and it will also lead to possibilities of oil and gas spillage within our oceans.
Are bodies like yourselves concerned that with Coburg's recent hassles that they've had, that we might one day face a Chernobyl disaster?
Yes, that is quite a huge possibility, because as has been recently reported, there's also been a mass exodus of skilled workers within the Coburg power station, as well as the fact that there has been recurring problems and ongoing problems, such as one of the reactors being offline for most of the year, as well as the previous issues regarding the loose bolt that was in Cuba that was then claimed to be sabotaged, and then that statement was retracted by the then minister. So there is a slight possibility that anything can go wrong, and then we do not have the technical capacity to prevent nuclear meltdown.
Ulrich, there's concern in the Eastern Cape, not so much from the East London side, but certainly from the PE side, that the proposed plant in Taysburg, which is between Jeffreys Bay and St. Francis Bay, while it seems to have gone quiet as far as any press releases from Coburg go, is that the fact? Is it something that we should be worried about? Are they going to plow ahead with this without keeping the public informed?
Yes, that is partly the main issue regarding the nuclear energy sector within South Africa, mainly because nuclear energy is seen as a national key point technology, so therefore they are legally allowed to keep many of the stuff in secret, because it is something that is of national concern, and it can also have many security issues, because nuclear energy can also be targeted by terrorists or other forms of extremist people that want to harm South Africa. So they try and hide behind that. And with regard to the Taysburg site, the National Nuclear Regulator is still in the process of going through the site licensing. But that's not all that you saw, an ongoing process. But the main issue is that there's lack of information, and then there's also poor public access to these public participation meetings. So what what then ends up happening is, in the few little chances that the public have any platform to provide any input, they are either systematically or actually, as what we've seen with the recent NNR hearings, sometimes even physically not allowed to attend these meetings.
So, in fact, do you find that both Eskom and the and NERSA and, in fact, the Department of Minerals and Energies are going out of their way to block you rather than try to work with you?
Yes. So they might not see it as such, but the mere fact that they are hiding behind the fact that they are technically allowed to hide some of these issues, it seems as if they are trying to block any public or civil society organizations just to have their say or have their valid input. A prime example would be with the acquisition of the steam generators that they got last year that nobody really truly knew about. We only found out about it when they arrived at the harbor, and only then that's when we heard that the French nuclear company Areva was awarded the tender to create these, to forge these steam generators, and then there was also lots of corruption issues and also lots of scandals that actually came to light with these generators being built in France. By Areva then got transported with the Russian army's airplanes to China, and when they arrived there, these steam generators that we've already paid for and the South African public wasn't aware of, these steam generators then failed their safety inspection there in China, so they had to be rebuilt in China, and then they were flown back to France, and then it was transported by a ship to South Africa. So it was basically a huge waste of money and time, but the main fact is they were bought for the lifespan extension of Kuiberg, which is not yet approved, but they've already kind of like put the cart before the horse and went and bought it without having the license of Kuiberg extended, or its lifespan extended. So it was supposed to be decommissioned in 2024, but now they are now opting to have it decommissioned 2021 years later to 2044 or 2045.
Is your impression that Kuiberg simply rides roughshod over the South African public with its lack of attention to licensing, or is it simply inefficiencies within the organization?
I would say it's a combination of both, because it's not just within the organization, but it's also within the Department of Energy, or which is now the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, in which they just go ahead without sometimes even having members of parliament being aware of what they are planning. So not only is the South African public or civil society organizations unaware, but sometimes even members of parliament are unaware of these things. So they are trying to sideline as much people and stuff as they can so that they can just get whatever they want done. Without having any obstacles, because those that would oppose it are not aware or ill-informed regarding these things.
You've issued a statement, or your body, various bodies have issued statements, claiming that the Kuiberg's management structure, and you did mention that people have left, is in tatters at the moment. How can the country trust Kuiberg to do a decent job if it hasn't got decent management?
That is, I think, the 1 trillion rand question. I don't think they will be able to. And most of the skilled workers, they either immigrate to other countries that have a more efficient nuclear energy sector, or they're just leaving Kuiberg out for whatever reasons that they do have. So in case anything does go wrong or there's some sort of thing, there's no There's no people to be held accountable, and then the management in it of itself, because they are basically affiliates or workers for Eskom, so the blame, they'll be playing the blame shift game. So we can't really trust what is happening there. I mean, there's been reports about the cracks that is in the Kuberg power station, and also reports of radioactive leakage that is in the area. And these things haven't been answered or addressed formally within the public. So there's no way that we can truly trust what they're saying, because it's basically just either kept secret or swept under the rug.
The bill for the upgrade is said to be $20 billion, but just about every Eskom project has gone far over budget. Are you expecting this to happen if Kuberg does get the go-ahead to refurbish for 20 years?
Yes, I would say 100%, so, because not only does Eskom have cost overruns and like time extensions for construction that is now kind of part and parcel with Eskom's energy sector development strategies, it is also within the nuclear energy sector globally that majority of the reactors and stuff that are being built globally, they are running way over schedule. So the cost implications of that just get amplified more and more. So that 20-year window, I don't think it's going to be efficient. I mean, you can have the power stations of Medupi and Kusile as an example about how far overdue these things will be running. So if it's already kind of international standard for nuclear builds to go way past their schedule, how much more would it be when Eskom or whichever company gets a contract to build these things? How much more would it be going over schedule? And then the final question would be, how much will it cost us as taxpayers within this country?
Well, let's hope there'll be no more surprises before we talk again. Thank you very much for your input. Would you like to just introduce yourself and a little bit about what the company does, please, or the NGO does?
Oh, yes. My name is Francesca De Gasperis. I'm the Executive Director of FASTI. We are the Southern African Faith Communities Environment Institute, and we work on issues of environmental justice, climate justice. We have a particular focus on energy, and we work in particular with faith communities, but we also do quite a lot of work, just sort of general awareness, monitoring government decision-making, and educating, really.
Francesca, the Western Cape in 1969 had a massive earthquake that just about wiped out the town of Tulbagh. The magnitude was 6.3. If something like that hit on the coast, especially near Kuberg, could the results be devastating?
Absolutely. And we know that there is seismic activity around Kuberg. In fact, SAFSI hired for that information. And we have a seismic report that we received. It is heavily redacted, but it's got some interesting information about the fact that actually Kuberg does sit on a fault. And as we know from other cities that have fallen to unexpected earthquakes like Christchurch, which was completely wiped out, an earthquake could have absolutely, and also Fukushima, of course, could have absolutely massive impact if it affected Kuberg nuclear power station.
Ulrich and I had discussed the fact that should something like that happen and a northwest wind suddenly blows, we could have nuclear fallout right around the Cape Peninsula, and that could be disastrous.
Disastrous, and it could mean that we'd have to leave and never come back in our living, in our lifetime. So there's some serious issues that we have to look at. And in terms of density around Kuberg, when it was built in the 1970s, and you know it was started over 40 years ago, the population density of the peninsula is much, much less. So the risks now associated with having or extending the life of a power plant so close to a major urban city are quite extreme. And in terms of international regulations, there would not be it would not be advised to have a power station so close to a major metropolis.
So with all the threats around Coburg and the fact that it only contributes, so your organization says, around 5% of energy, would it not be better for us to be focusing on renewables?
Absolutely. And I mean, as much as we hear that Coburg is this reliable, steady base load of 5%, we also know that Unit 1, and that's half the power coming out of Coburg, has been down more this year than up. So it's not even 5% for this year. So the idea, and in any event, when you speak to energy experts, the idea that you require base load in modern energy planning is actually a straw man. It's actually about whether you have sufficient power to cover all 24 hours. So you don't have to have a constant power source like nuclear. What you need to do is diversify your energy so that you have sufficient at night if you're using a lot of solar. So it's really about thinking about how you do your energy planning rather than assuming that you have to have something like nuclear that you can never turn off to give provide baseload.
The recent elections have shown us that South Africans are the most tolerant race. We have again voted the ANC into power despite the regular protests and that. So protesting might not work, especially with what your organization is doing. Internationally, agencies like yours drag the culprits into court, but it costs money. Does your group and groups like yours have the budget to go to court?
Well, you know, it's an interesting phenomenon about democracy. Unfortunately, South Africa isn't the only one who's fallen down when people are given free voting. We've seen it in the US, we've seen it in the UK, where, you know, leaders who really need to be held to account aren't being done so. So in terms of our democracy and in terms of how we see us monitoring and following government, it's, you know, litigation is one thing. We have done it in the past with Earth Life Africa, Johannesburg, Ulrich, who you're speaking to earlier as a representative from there. In 2017, the last nuclear deal was declared illegal and unconstitutional. So we could do that. And obviously, when government makes very, very bad decisions on behalf of its citizens without following due process, that is the opportunity when litigation comes. For two small NGOs, it's a tall order. But we would not hesitate to step into the breach if it came to that. So it's not so much about the money and more about whether we are resolute in our views, which we are.
Francesca, the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, NERSA, has issued a statement that says there is no harm suffered by NERSA should NERSA issue a license and the environmental impact assessment appeal fails later, as there is a provision in the legislation to revoke such licenses. Surely that is putting the cart before the horse.
Absolutely. And you'll see recently with the NNR bill, the amendments that are being made are just weakening legislation. There's very good reasons why there's energy procurement procedures. Part of it is about being transparent. Part of it is about following due process. And absolutely, I agree with you. I think you have to do an environmental impact assessment before you start issuing licenses. That is utterly absurd. And whoever is considering that obviously doesn't really think about the purpose of an environmental impact assessment. Maybe they just see it as a box-ticking exercise, so therefore it's a box that they can tick lower down on the form. But in point of fact, it actually tells us whether it's a viable site or not. So it's absolutely critical, in my view, that that happens first.
So there we have it, listeners. Two experts who predict that Eskom is going to try and pull the wool over South Africans' eyes, which will definitely send business costs soaring. Thank you for listening.